Welcome, everybody, to the April 19th regular board meeting. Can we have a roll call?
Director Mabee is not here. I will call him again. Director Paul?
Here.
Director Jenko?
Here.
Director Butler?
Here.
Director Bidge?
Present.
Thank you.
Can I get a motion to adopt the agenda?
So moved.
Anybody second it?
Thank you, Director Jenko, for the motion. Thank you, Director Butler. Roll call, Director Paul.
Aye.
Director Jenko?
Aye.
Director Butler?
Aye.
Director Bidge?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can I get a motion to adopt the consent calendar?
I'll move.
Thank you, Director Butler.
Second.
Thank you, Director Jenko. Roll call, Director Paul.
Aye.
Director Jenko.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Aye.
Director Bidge.
No.
Thank you, sir.
Do we need some discussion on it?
If you want.
Yeah, listen. Go for it.
Well, I communicated throughout the day with staff on a number of mistakes, errors, and omissions that I found in the packet. And I'm not going to vote for a calendar with all those errors and omissions. It was represented to me that it would be fixed after the meeting. That's not satisfactory to my way of thinking. These are public documents. We should take more care before they are posted for public review. There are some fundamental errors throughout the packet tonight, and I am most disappointed in what I see.
Okay. So let's go on to the staff reports.
All right, good evening. I'd like to announce the addition of Beverly Sutcliffe as our new full-time utility billing clerk and Jaylene Ferris as our new full-time office technician. The district is actively searching to fill the open accounting manager position and has recently received some potential candidates for interview. The district is proud to announce that there are no workman's compensation claims for the last two quarters. For our FEMA disaster relief project, on April 3rd, the district met with representatives from OES and FEMA, discussed the documented damage from the New Year's Eve storm. We have submitted the damage estimation forms and are in the process of uploading other documentation in the FEMA portal. Staff met with FEMA on site on the 18th, and they looked at all the damage areas. I also want to report the CIA ditch repair is considered to be close to 90% completed, and use of the ditch should be reestablished soon. Developer billings, progress has been made on developer billings to date, including Riverview and Retreats North and East. There are currently less than 15 billings that still need to be brought up to speed, many of which are under current review. This effort, of course, is being balanced with other administrative rehabilitation efforts. We're working to restore this process, providing the quarterly statements to developers. District met with the representatives from the Murrieta Airport to discuss past security and drainage tax calculations. Within the next month, we believe the district will be able to provide a letter to the airport reps outlining the district's understanding of their applicable tax rates and potential for reimbursement for past charges, if any. Residents East, the developer has submitted, excuse me?
No, I just wanted to ask you a question.
Sure.
Has that been an amicable discussion?
I wouldn't be able to comment on that. It's just more of a business discussion at this point. I wouldn't know how to rate what amicable is or is not with the airport. No one sued anybody. So.
I'd say the parties have some disagreements to work through, but we're actively working on this.
Yeah, okay. Doing what we can.
That's what I wanted to hear.
For Residence East, the developer submitted the drainage study for Residence East. The district will be reviewing this drainage study and providing comments. Retreats North and East, with the exception of work that cannot be accessed based on soil saturation, contractual updates to Lift Station 6B and storm drainage correction issues. KHAV was nearing completion of the punch list items for utilities for the north phases of the retreats. KHAV will likely be submitting the requested items to have the district board formally accept this infrastructure, start the warranty period for the donated infrastructure within the next few months, likely. Once accepted, this infrastructure will be booked in the district appreciation schedule.
What does that, can you do that in English?
So let me see, my English is not so good. Basically, we're making sure that the retreats development installs all the infrastructure correctly, and it's in good working order prior to us accepting that infrastructure. Once the district formally accepts that infrastructure, at that point we add it to our depreciation schedule with the rest of our infrastructure.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, no problem. Outreach and regional communication. March 30th, the district and district IT met with the outgoing manager of the Rancho Marietta Association and district IT to discuss the planning and installation of a VLAN that will assist in integrating the district and the RMA camera utilization. Our IT will be providing us with a quote to perform this work. The district will then resume discussions with RMA on implementation, and I have a meeting tomorrow with outgoing general manager and incoming general manager to discuss that joint effort and that joint venture. Integrated Water Master Plan. As you know, we had a special communications committee town hall on March 18th to discuss the district Integrated Water Master Plan. District also plans on holding a town hall meeting to address proposed rate increases on April 26th at 6 p.m. at the Rancho Marietta Country Club Marietta Room. We had an emergency response issue happen with a minor chlorine release. On Saturday the 15th, the water treatment facility experienced a small chlorine leak and residents were restricted from the surrounding area for about 2 hours. An employee accidentally initiated a chlorine alarm button, which caused the chlorine cylinders to automatically lock down. When the cylinders automatically locked down, a regulator became loose and a very limited amount of chlorine gas trapped in the feed tube was released. We estimate that being less than 1 pound of chlorine gas at that time. An employee was taken to the emergency room as a precaution. That employee is okay, and they're stabilized. This will count against our workman's comp for the next quarter.
Will or will not?
Will. Yes. Yeah. Since this event, the chlorine regulator has been checked and reinstalled to the correct torque. The district is in the design process of replacing the chlorine gas disinfection at both the water treatment facility and the wastewater treatment facility, as you know, with our two projects. The design for the water treatment plant project is almost 100% complete, and we are in the process. We started today conducting an after-action inspection and reports. So Travis and I are working on that. What are some of the lessons that we learned from this, you know, what could have been a bad catastrophe?
What question?
I see that. Which was my question, is where were you on the transference or the change between what we're doing now and what was...
Good question. You know, we're nearing 100% design completion. So once that design is complete, we'll get an update on our engineer's estimate for what is the cost, what do the engineers believe the construction cost will be to implement that upgrade. At that time, the board will hopefully make a decision moving forward. Do we move forward with the construction, put it up to bid, or do we do find out a plan B?
Would this accident have happened in this manner if we'd had the same situation?
No, because we'd be dealing with sodium hypochlorite, which is similar to a high-strength bleach instead of a gaseous substance.
Okay. That's what I wanted to know.
So I have a question about the regulator becoming loose. It seems antithetical to me. So do I read that as being a malfunction?
I don't know what antithetical means.
Well, it's illogical if there's a lockdown, that's to protect everything and shut everything down. So if we had gas escape because of the regulator, that seems in my mind to have been a malfunction.
Well, yeah, in a way it was. During the summertime, during the wintertime, we don't use as much chlorine as we do during the summer. And so we don't, the actuators stay on the vacuum regulators a little bit longer, and they're not switched out as much. So the vacuum regulator was loose, and that was a malfunction of probably me, because we should be checking those, and that will be, I will be writing up a preventative maintenance SOP for that, so where that we'll be checking those. That was part of my response to OES when I spoke with them. The actuators did their job. It was sitting on there for so long, it just came loose. And so we are putting in things to fix that.
And to be clear, the chlorine that leaked was the chlorine that was left in the tube.
Correct.
The actuator actually worked and sealed off the chlorine like it should have.
Yeah.
Just to be clear.
Once the plant was turned off, the vacuum was removed. So the little bit that spurted out when it came loose a little bit is when it was released. So there was multiple issues that we are putting fixes in place.
And that's good to hear. For additional clarity, this should be a sealed system, and so nothing should have escaped.
Correct. That's
regardless of where it was located.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Okay.
Who did we have to alert? Who did we have to notify that this happened?
Well, we were supposed to have notified OES. We met the federal regulations, but we found out that we didn't meet the state regulations. So federal regulations, if it's under 10 pounds, you just fix the problem. But according to their state regulations, and we are going to be updating our emergency response plan for our chlorine to also discuss this with OES, let OES know.
Just to say, this is the first chlorine leak that I've had, and so I don't know what I don't know until, unfortunately, we had the incident. So moving forward, I know about my shortcomings and the issues, and we will be fixing them to ensure that this doesn't happen again. We're going to be putting plastic covers over the red emergency stop buttons, which is what OES recommended. I'm going to talk to my regulator about that tomorrow. He's actually on site tomorrow doing an inspection. So
a PUC regulator?
No, our regular state water regulator.
Okay.
So he's coming in for our annual visit. So what I'm doing is to ensure safety, and we will. Now that I know what I don't know, We'll fix our no. So,
I actually think we're very lucky that this was a small release,
yep.
And we've learned a lot from this. So, we'll move forward with that information and apply it, take advantage of it.
How quickly do you expect that we're going to be at 100% so that we can look at this?
I would guess probably within the next month they'll have it completed.
Okay.
And then it'll be brought to improvements, and with the updated engineer's estimate. We have an engineer's estimate at the 60%, and I believe that's in the utility report.
I haven't heard from HDR.
Oh, it might be in there.
From old report. And we're waiting to hear back from Dewberry.
Yeah.
So.
Any other questions for Mike? If not, Paula? You're on board.
Thank you. So really quickly, we don't have any updates from the Poon Group yet regarding the accounting audit process. Tyler Technologies has taken the front and center place for this week and next week regarding the utility billing implementation. Today we're in the middle of doing a data pull for our utility billing process, providing them with all of the documentation to their programmers to ensure that the information is correct. Our go-live date is next Monday. The district staff will be, the district staff will be working with the Tyler Technology Project Management Team Monday through Thursday from 8:30 to 3:30. So we will be closed to the public so we can focus on this implementation and getting the utility billing implemented correctly. Essentially, the process will be, day one, we'll be looking at all of the information that is loaded into the system with all of the updated accounts. Day two, we'll be looking at uploading all of the payments that we've received and manually entered into a spreadsheet, and then loading that information as well as additional payments received on the last final date. And then the 26th, which is Wednesday, we'll be looking at running the utility bills in totality, reviewing those, checking those, making sure everything is correct, and getting them mailed out. And then Thursday is wrap up with all of our AR reporting, ensuring that we've capturing all of our data correctly, all of our revenues are going to the right places, and so on. So ultimately, it's going to be a very busy time for our team. We have some workarounds with some of the issues that we've run into with the tenant landlord accounts. So we'll be definitely keeping an eye out for those anomalies next week. And we're very hopeful that this will be a successful implementation.
So when you say we're going to be closed,
correct,
that means no residents can come into the front
office? Correct.
And the front office people are involved in this training also?
Correct.
We have nobody.
Moving forward, we have no new contracts under $25,000 to report. Again, with our utility billing, we do have a significant amount of residents in this past month that have not paid their bills. So again, we encourage all residents to enter into an installment payment plan. We are instituting the water shutoffs in the next couple of weeks after we go live in the new system. And we would like to get all of these accounts up to date. One of the other things that has come about based on the reconciliation of the accounts for the Tyler utility billing is a lot of these off-billed accounts. We have 487 that we identified that have a past due balance on them that is considered uncollectible. So at this time, the amount totals $245.89. Aging history on these accounts date back to 2012. The majority of them are 2012 to 2021. We've cleared up a lot of those in the last couple of years. So the remainder of these, we'll need to research each account and determine what the best way to collect this, or if we need to write this off as uncollected debt. We'll be bringing more information to the Finance Committee. I would certainly not say within the next couple of Finance Committee meetings, but definitely by the summertime once we get the implementation done and we have better idea of our what we can do and recommend to the board. So at this point, I have no other information to present. Are there any questions?
Anybody? If not,
I'm just a dummy. First paragraph under aging report says the total amount due to the district for outstanding 60 and 90 day past due balances is $39,182.65. There are 81 residents who are 60 days past due for 17027.82, 45 residents 90 days past due for 36635.26. That adds up to over $53,000. So is the $39,000 figure assuming that we've already abandoned the $17,000 and change referenced in the second paragraph?
No, I think you're reading too much into that. It's actually an error. I did not correct that from last month's report. I was actually in the middle of Tyler implementation, which took a significant amount of my time. So I tried to get the staff report done as quick as possible. So that is my mistake.
So it actually is $53,000 and change, not
$36,000. Correct. It is $53,663.08.
Anybody have any other questions?
Yeah. All right, can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Please introduce yourself.
Mike Marteau, 424. I know you spent a lot of money on a new accounting system, if I remember about a year ago, and then we had training on that stuff. Now we have the PUM group. Do we know how much we've spent for the PUM group so far on with our accounting process?
I believe to date the invoicing amount that we have paid out is about $68,000, but we have not received any invoices for quite some time.
And that was back in December?
December or January, yes.
So if I'm not mistaken, I think we spent over about $250,000 on this new system, and we still haven't caught up on this process yet. I'm just asking the question to the board. So do we have a drop dead or a drop dollar amount where we think we're going to get this thing fixed?
Two separate, from what I understand.
Yes.
It's two separate situations. Tyler is in the process of being implemented.
Right.
As Paula said, training has started and it will continue to go on, but it's pretty new as far as actual.
Is Tyler going to get us out of the PUM group where we don't need it anymore because it's an automated system?
Yes. So if I may, there are two things that are happening here simultaneously. The audit catch-up with the PUM group is completely separate than the Tyler implementation. The Tyler implementation is the actual system that we will be using that'll get us away from all of our antiquated legacy systems and our manual processes, which is the Excel spreadsheets and, you know, the documents that we use to do the reporting. We currently are implementing the utility billing module. We cannot import and implement the financial piece until the audits are done. So until we have clean financial data, we can't move forward with transferring that data into the Tyler system for the implementation. So while they run concurrently, they're two separate things that are occurring.
And last question, when we get the Tyler group in, is that going to eliminate, what is our goal with the Tyler? What's that going to achieve for us for the district?
The Tyler Technologies ERP Pro system is a one-stop shop. So this is going to give us our permitting system, our AR, our AP, our utility billing, our core financials, all of our payroll. We're going to be bringing payroll back in-house. So this is our one-stop shop, and everything is contained within one system. So right now, the systems that we have are all external and are independent of one another. And what that does is it gives us a significant amount of human error possibilities when we're reporting things because everything is done manually. So we're either uploading or downloading or both between two systems into the general ledger. And if the information isn't imported, exported correctly, there's problems in the systems. And it could go both ways. So for example, Paychex does all of our payroll processing, but there's a general ledger report. When Paychex was set up, it was not set up properly with the proper accounting codes. So that means that the general ledger report that staff receive every 2 weeks when we run a payroll, we have a significant amount of massaging the data to ensure that the proper expense accounts are being debited correctly in the general ledger system. So if we're off on one thing, it throws everything else off. And so it takes a significant amount of time for staff to process the payroll GL report into the general ledger system to ensure that we're doing this accurately. And this affects our reporting ultimately. So with the Tyler system, we won't have that that disconnect between the two systems because they will all be self-contained and it will talk to one another.
Okay, thank you.
On the aging report, is that total? I've got $17,245,891. So is that, in fact, a $17,000 figure?
Are you referring to the 487 past due balance accounts
Yes.
that are logged off?
Yes.
Yes, it is a $17,000.
So the one is extraneous?
Yes.
At the end? So an average of about $35 per delinquency, if I did my math correctly?
Probably.
Okay. And they extend over a long period of time?
Yes.
Okay. Does that require board action to excuse those or declare them as uncollectible?
Paula's shaking her head, yes. I'm not familiar with the policy that we have on that.
Yes. Any debt that is written off by the district has to be approved by the board.
And that's an accounting requirement, I
Correct.
Assume.
Correct. Yeah. Yes.
Isn't there, and it may not apply to this situation, but isn't there something that we can do to send the debt to the county?
We could send it through a lien process. That would be about a year down the road to collect these. Some of these dating back to 2012, it's possible that they don't exist. You know, we tried the collections route. That wasn't successful. So it may just be that some of these accounts we will need to write off. Some of the more recent ones from 2019, 2020, we might be able to collect it through a lien. But ultimately, that lien goes directly onto the property that's been vacated by that specific owner. So it wouldn't be advantageous for us to collect on that. You know, typically we see that through the move-in, move-out process. So...
Okay. Kelly, you're up.
Thank you. Let's start with our operations. Currently, we have 8 full-time gate officers and 2 part-time gate officers, and we have 3 patrol officers. We have 3 patrol officers positions that are vacant. I'm happy to announce, though, we have done away with our ABA contract security. We're fully in-house now with our gate officers. We're very happy about that. Patrol shifts, there were 93 of them. We were not able to cover 23 of them. There's still a hiring freeze from the board about filling those 3 officer positions. Safety center repairs, we'll get to that a little bit later on. Our Toyota truck is still was held up at the docks for a quality control issue. Then when upon being released, they sold it, but not to us. So back on the list again to hopefully get that our Toyota truck in service at least by July 4th, because that's a big day for the district, and hopefully we'll have it by then. This board approved some vests for our officers. They have been all fitted, and they have been ordered, and we're just awaiting for the order to come in. Then our security patrol officers will be wearing fitted vests on patrol. Moving on to Rancho Marietta Association, I spoke with Director of Compliance Chris Smith and asked him again what are we doing about the speeding around the golf course paths, the bridge, and he indicated that they're working on putting on a sign that says 10 miles an hour before before the bridge. But I understand there's another general manager coming on, so I don't know if they're going to continue with that plan or if they're going to do something different. But whatever they do, we'll be there to help them. But I did ask about that for you.
3 years.
3 years, okay. So,
3 years.
Again, we're working with CSD. We're writing a lot of citations for speeding and for stop sign violations. And the citizens are going to the board or the compliance committee saying, hey, it's he said, she said, he said, he said. And so these cameras will hopefully break that tie. And I think it's if a community member says, absolutely, I didn't run that stop sign, and it's just he said, and they get so stuck with the fine, they go back a little bit hostile, thinking that they never did that, and they are a little more hostile towards security. So these cameras, I think, are a great thing, and they will break that tie, so to speak, and that way there's just no question. And so we're going to have the same ones that R may have, and hopefully they can install them for us, and we'll save a little bit of money that way. But those are en route. Maybe they're 3 or 4 weeks out. Moving on, the village, I spoke with the manager. I'm sorry.
Wasn't RMA supposed to get the trailers that actually take a picture of what you're doing? And
correct. They're working on 2 trailers right now. I don't know if that's the right term, trailers, but they're 2 machines that will capture speeding, and they will automatically issue those tickets, and then they can process those. I don't know where they are. I know they have ordered them, and they're going to be deploying those as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. I talked to the village manager. They had a unique death investigation I'll talk about a little bit later. Going on to community crime concerns, I met with a community member about a squatting incident, and this just goes to show that we as security aren't always in the loop with law enforcement issues. This gentleman came in and said his house had been ransacked, and there was items stolen, there were money stolen, and this was 9 months ago, and he came in and asked for my help because the sheriffs weren't getting back to him. The detectives weren't getting back with him. He talked to, I think it's Susan Frost, is that her name?
No, Sue Frost.
Sue Frost, and no one was getting back to him, and he didn't know what to do, so I gave him some inside information to how to work with police department, and I said you might want to just contact the victim or the suspect, because the suspect's a 13-year-old female, but he didn't want to do that because the sheriff told him not to, but it had been 9 months. And finally he made contact with the guardian, and she was upset. They paid for his deductible, and we were able to resolve it that way. But this just goes to show we don't always get all this information currently. It was 9 months before we knew about it, and we were able to help out with that. a situation. The other thing, I've met with a few community members about the bonfire issues, and with the summer coming up, you keep having, unfortunately, young adults going to different parts. They'll go to Mr. Sullivan's property, they'll go to the undeveloped property and start bonfires. Our security staff will see that, but RMA has made it clear we don't have jurisdiction to give them a ticket. We don't have jurisdiction to stop them, especially when they're not in the RMA property. So what we can do is that we'll say, hey, you guys need to leave, or a lot of times they see us and they'll take off. We'll do it as a courtesy to leave, but we don't have jurisdiction to cite them. We don't have an MOU. A lot of times they'll take off, we can't get a hold of them. So what the problem has been is that, well, who do we know to put the fire out? We put at least 3 fires out with our fire extinguishers. But then that adds the point, well, we're not professional firefighters. What if we left an amber, or what if we didn't put it out properly and the wind takes it off? Why aren't we calling the fire department out there? They're supposed to do it. Past practice has been, when we call them, they won't say no, they'll come out, but they're kind of like, they'll kind of like, you know, go to the water, go to the river, take us some water and pour it on there, or take a bucket and put it out with the, why'd you guys call us for that? So that's what we're trying to work out for this summer, is to have some kind of arrangement. Who do you want to call, go out there in the middle of the night to put out a fire? Do you want the fire department to call every time? Are we supposed to do it? Is there liability with us doing it? So those are the kind of issues I've been working out with the community, and we continue. That's going to stump us a little bit. Yes, ma'am.
Has there been any more conversation at all about closing the gates at night?
Not from RMA, not from the compliance meeting, no. But as we go into the summer, we're going to try to be proactive with that.
Go ahead.
Sorry about that. You have 3 vacancies on patrol right now?
Correct, we do.
So you're just not covering those shifts? I thought you said that the board said there's no overtime.
There's no overtime for patrol, and there's a hiring freeze. I can't hire for those 3 positions of patrol. Correct.
Okay, so are you guys tracking the savings that you're doing on the proposition? Because if you're not running the positions, you're not spending that money in salaries and benefits. So are you guys? Are you guys tracking all that? Because if you have, I think how many vacancies you have this month? You got 3.
3. Mm-hmm.
3 vacancies, so 40 hours a week.
I think actually the 3 vacancies, one is not funded, but the other 2 are.
Which is still, it's still part of the security budget.
Correct.
So you got, I think you're using 4.2 positions, not counting other things.
Okay.
So are you tracking the savings that you're not spending on patrol, because it's salary savings? And it's benefit savings. So when you don't have you're not hiring the positions, you don't have the burden for the pension, you don't have the burden for the health care, and you don't have the cost of that patrol. So you should be tracking that, especially 3 positions for 2 months, you should be tracking probably about $8,000-$10,000 that you should be showing that you have that in savings.
Yes, we do have that.
Okay. Had you guys ever published that? Because I always see is that when you're short patrols, but I never see where you track that on the financials, that you save $30,000.
When we would provide the budget to actuals, you would see that we wouldn't be hitting our targets for what we had budgeted versus what we had actually expended. We could certainly provide a number in the future as far as what
I didn't see it on the financials you guys just released and on the web page. I didn't see any. I just saw the cost, and the cost looks like it's pretty consistent on a bunch of things. So I had a couple follow-up questions, but I don't see anything where you're not spending that kind of money. If you got no overtime and you can't fill the positions, you're not doing the patrols, you should be showing in parentheses the amount of money you're not spending on the proposition. That is a taxpayer voted on proposition. So you're not spending that kind of money.
Again, it would be in the budget year. It would be in the budget to actuals. You would see that. What we last presented was the first 6 months when all of those positions were filled. So those vacancies were within the last, 3 months?
Yes.
The last 3 months. So, and we haven't presented Q3 budget to actuals at this point. We plan to present that at the June 7th board meeting. So you would see that information there.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So back to the bonfires, those are the issues that we're actively working on to try to proactively solve for the summer.
Michael, are you going to say something?
No, it's okay. She said.
Do you have a question?
No, I thought Michael had a question, but so we're going to be talking to RMA about closing those gates?
Yeah. Well, about what to do about with the bonfire, who do they want notified?
Close the gates.
And there's, I understand there's other ways to get into the Rancho Mirage besides the gates, so we're going to look at that. And who to notify when there is a fire. And but yeah, it's an ongoing issue. If there's no questions, next slide.
A little bit of color in the report.
A little bit of color, thank you. That's our, there's no questions about those. Those are.
I have some questions about the violation report,
okay,
Kelly. Okay,
we have to go back.
Two questions, actually. Let me start with the parking. We've had some discussion in the past several months about updating the agreement between CSD and RMA about providing driveway parking and street parking. Patrol, I see a number of citations being issued by our staff. Where are we in terms of updating that agreement for those services? And we also talked in the first category about some discussion regarding traffic enforcement. Have any of those discussions with RMA proceeded?
No, we are waiting for Director Mabee stated in a email that he is working with the board over there at RMA, and there's a new general manager coming in, so I imagine shortly and after we know what our budget is, we're going to be on that. That's the last I've heard. Mm-hmm. As the next question was about traffic? Or they're both the same response?
Well, I mean, it's we have an agreement.
Correct.
With RMA for $35 an hour for 10 hours a month.
Right.
It's been in place since before dinosaurs.
Yes.
And so we know that whatever amount of time we're putting in, we're not recouping our costs, number
correct.
One. And number two, you know, either we need to update or, in my opinion, we either need to update or rescind that agreement, which the agreement allows us to give notice and stop that service. And then I have questioned before, I see in terms of speeding, there's more RMA citations than CSD in the month of March, and that's actually true for a three-month pattern. And my question is, since I do not believe that Measure J mandates us to provide traffic enforcement either inside or outside the gates, it seems to me that either we, and given the dire funding issues that we have, either one, discontinue doing that traffic enforcement, or two, enter into a new agreement with RMA where they actually pay the cost of that enforcement. And
I don't disagree. I just understand that from Director Mabee that that's in progress, and we're just waiting on a couple things to go forward with that. But I absolutely, if the board says disengage traffic enforcement, we will. I'm just in a holding pattern, and we're getting close.
You know, and I can start that discussion tomorrow with the new GM.
Right.
I am meeting with that new GM on camera, so
right.
That's a nice segue.
Right.
If you'd like to come over at that time, Kelly, then
right,
it might
right.
be valuable.
I don't disagree anything with Director Booth said. It absolutely needs to be redone. And my understanding is we're waiting to see how short we're going to be in security. We're waiting for a new general manager, and that director maybe was already talking to the RMA board, is my understanding. So just kind of been in a holding pattern until I get a clear direction.
Seems like it's certainly an issue that can be discussed at the budget presentation. If we could make some decision if we're going to fund that service.
I imagine it'll also probably be a discussion item at the GM president's meeting coming up
next week.
Great.
It should.
So hopefully we get close. John.
John Sullivan, Rancho North developer. 7075 via Rovia. Do we know how much is in the security impact fee pool of money?
We do not have fund balances from the Poon Group at this time.
Really? Okay, then I suggest that the section in regard to security impact fees that's embedded in the financing and services agreement for Cosumnes River and Rancho North policy statement be distributed to all the boards so we can get it right when you figure out how much you've got to spend. The second thing is, I don't understand what the barbecues, open fires, and bonfires, what that number would have been for 2022 calendar year. Is there a number of bonfires that
you're saying you want to know what last year's numbers were?
I don't see anything on there for this year.
It is 2023.
Yeah, it is 2023. I don't see anything on there.
So do we assume
we didn't cite, right, correct.
If the blank is a blank, then there was no citation?
Right. That's within our jurisdiction. There are bonfires that we don't have jurisdiction. We'll just tell them to leave, and we'll put out the fire and move away.
I sure hope we're not going to get involved in a discussion about jurisdiction. Your jurisdiction is the entire 3,500 acres of Rancho Murrieta.
Per RMA policy, we cannot cite.
RMA does not take care of the property outside of RMA's annexed area. You're responsible for the whole 3,500 acres.
Correct. No one's saying we're not going to go there and ask them to put out the fire and tell them to leave. I'm talking about actually giving them a citation for what they did. We don't have that jurisdiction in your area.
My question is, how many did we have in 2022 bonfires?
I don't know. I'd have to get with RMA and get their stats.
So I have a related question. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at, after the unauthorized vehicle list, there are an additional, I just counted them up, I forget now if it's 21 or 31 different titles, potential violations. Under what authority are any of those issues that follow after unauthorized vehicle, what authority is there for CSD to be responsible for ISD? They all look like RMA rules to me. What's our authority for enforcing any of those RMA rules and having our staff issue citations for any of those violations that are listed underneath unauthorized vehicle?
I'd have to refer us to our agreement with RMA, and depending how you interpret that, I can tell you this for our... Since 2000, the role of just kind of like maybe a gentleman's agreement, hey, you guys need to do a little bit more, you guys need to help and make it a better community. For example, we get calls all the time. When I'm going to go into this next, at the end here, this death investigation was a suicide. We're not, per our own rules and regulations, we're not supposed to respond to that, but the community demanded that we respond. We demanded we did a report, and sometimes we'll do what the community wants just to try to give better customer service. So I think in that spirit is where over this last two decades, our role has increased to doing a little bit more to help the community and to help their complaints. But you're right, I can't give you this authority says we do that. It's just been kind of stretching our original agreement and doing a little bit more. It's nothing, I don't think, in a bad way, but you're right, it does need to be updated.
Well, it is a bad way to the extent that I have been hearing since at least this time last year, and I think earlier, that we're not bringing in enough revenue from Measure J to pay for our security services. I think an ill-timed measure was presented to the community last November, thoroughly trashed. And so I think that the days, and I'm not criticizing, I don't mean to taking this out on you, Kelly.
No, I don't.
But it seems to me that the time for gentlemen's agreements or such, you know, the wink and the nod should be over, and we should absolutely be taking a look at what are we minimally required to do in the way of security pursuant to the language in Measure J, and anything other than that, we should discontinue. That's my opinion. I don't know how I bring it to this board except through the budget process, maybe, to have that discussion, but I've raised it now every month since December, and we don't seem to be making any progress in that regard. And I'm all for, you know, supporting the community and helping, you know, meet community needs. But when we are being thoroughly trashed by members of our community, and especially about, there was a whole thing this weekend next door, and somebody complained because her daughter got cited for driving 31 miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour zone. If that's the mentality of the community, we need to stop helping enable that kind of mindset. Just my opinion.
And correct, once the board gives us directions, we follow. We do what the board says.
Go ahead.
Eddie Ferraro, Belize Accord on the South. I, and good evening to all of you in front of me. Stephen, I feel for you 100%. In 2010, I took it on. My manager would not listen to me at the time. And they said that, I said, this is a gentleman's agreement, the only agreement you have that goes back to the 1990-something or other that you referred to was the only thing that you had for a few dollars for, and this was at nights only, between midnight and so on. It's still enforced. And nobody would do anything about it. And then the lawyer at the time came in and said, you cannot do barking dogs, you cannot detain dogs, you cannot do this, you cannot do that, that were things that were given to the community under this unknown agreement, if you want to call it that. And you are so correct in what you're trying to do is actually get a written document, and it's well overdue. Whatever you need for support, I will get my support hat back on in order for this to happen, because this is ridiculous and it's not Kelly's problem. This goes way back and nobody is listening. So RMA and CSD were never able to communicate how they wanted to change this, but CSD is doing the work and not getting paid for it. And every cent is going to the RMA. Not that that's wrong. I'm not complaining that they're wrong. I'm complaining that there is no legal way that we can enforce anything unless we have a paper to do it.
And a lot of these listed are architectural and non-architectural rule references of RMA, and in my opinion, have no business.
This was the government
showing up in a CSD security report.
You're correct. And that's what I went after. These are non-ARC rules. Some of the non-ARC rules are not even covered under the CC&Rs, such as parking a vehicle on your driveway. When I came on board as a board member, they refused to let us park anything on the driveway. I had to go back to the CC&Rs and prove that their non-ARC rules were not in compliance with their CC&Rs. And only then was this community allowed to park a vehicle on their driveway. A lot of the vehicles, I was told at that time, the vehicles are too big.
For the garage.
You should not buy a big vehicle, period. And I said, yeah, try to talk that to the community. Not going to float too well. So I'm 100% behind you, and anything that you need done, everybody's got my name and phone number. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Okay.
Thank you, Betty.
Go ahead, Richard.
Hi. I say a big amen to what Stephen says. It's long overdue if somebody on this board says something like that. I don't know what CSD is doing enforcing RMA's CC&Rs. In effect, this is RMA's security department.
It is.
And I've seen the security agreement with RMA. As I recall, it talks about two things, driveway parking, street parking. And why are you doing stop signs? Why are you doing speeding? I don't know. I mean, I've raised that question, and no answer, no reply, totally ignored by this board. And why are we over in the village and Myriad of Gardens too, paying for security, paying for this? It's an outrage. And counting, looking at this monthly security reports, counting the number of hours that you're writing stop signs, sitting there, writing stop sign tickets, doing speeding tickets, it certainly adds up to more than 35 hours in a month. I mean, so I say amen, and this needs to stop. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Kelly, you want to continue?
There's no question about the slide. We continue the next one.
Yes, very good.
Next slide here. There's no questions with that one.
Lightning's fast, Kelly.
All right, next one. Next one. All right, this is our entry. It's not a lot of difference from last month. Our denials, calls for service, and then we'll get to the instance of notes. On 3-2-2023, at approximately 23:35 hours, CST security was on routine patrol in the village area when the officer observed a vehicle parked alongside the entrance into the village with his emergency hazard lights on. The officer approached the vehicle and discovered nobody was in the vehicle. The officer had CST dispatch run the license plates and discovered the vehicle came back to a residence from Rancho Marietta South. The officer was about ready to leave, and he noticed a male walking from the village approached the security officer and was questioned about the vehicle. The resident stated that he owned the vehicle and that that's why it was parked there. The resident refused to identify himself, and the security officer left the scene without quite knowing what he was doing there at almost 11 o'clock at night entering the village. The CST security officer then departed for his next security stop at the Catholic Church parking lot. The resident followed the security officer and began to apologize for his behavior back at the village complex. The resident stated that he was not comfortable with the security officer asking him questions about his vehicle and why he was at the village in the first place. As the security officer explained that he has a right to question the residents and to attempt to prevent crime, the resident became belligerent and began to yell profanity at the officer. The security officer returned his vehicle and departed the location, and the resident did the same. And the reason why I put this in there, when they talk about our jurisdiction, what we do, this is what I expect from our security staff. This is what you want at 11 o'clock at night, a vehicle sitting out outside of the village with its lights on, knowing around. You want our security staff to question and poke and find out what they're doing for. But this person followed them a good block and then got out and started to yell at our officer in the middle of the night. He's by himself. I put this in there to show this is what kind of stuff that goes on, and we want to... this is what I expect our officers to do. In this case, he did the right thing. He got in the vehicle and went off. We still don't know why he was there at 11 o'clock at night in the village when he lives at the south. But that's why I put that one in there. Again, on 3-17-23 at 12:30 hours, our security sergeant responded to a request to conduct a follow-up investigation of a death at the village complex. Sergeant Outram was advised that on 3-14-23, 3 days prior, a resident had reported a deceased body was in a vehicle that was parked in the guest parking lot. The village manager responded to the scene and verified a deceased individual and a firearm were inside the vehicle. The Sheriff's Department and Metro Fire responded and eventually turned the case over to the County Coroner's Office for the death investigation. Again, this is a call per our own regulations we're not supposed to go to, but the community demanded we go there and assist out with that, and we went ahead and did with that. So that's why those are in there. So if there's any other questions with that? Thank you. Oh,
so
I'm sorry.
Who? I don't need to know the name, but the request for us to conduct a follow-up investigation came from a resident or from whom?
From the manager of the village complex.
And so my question is, why was that person simply not referred to the sheriff's department?
She was on that Friday when she called. We didn't have security, but she was upset by it. She goes, why do we have security? Some of the things that we hear, I hear a lot from... like the equestrian center, the general manager of the golf cart, we're paying all these security fees, what are we getting? So we try to give them as much as we can without like interfering with the investigation. It's just good community service. We're trying to give everybody service, whether you're in the village or you're at Bel Air, we're trying to do the best we can with what we have, with our limited capacity. A customer service, we're trying to give it.
Kelly, back to the traffic violations thing, and why we're doing it. Is there something that we're not doing because we're spending time?
No,
on traffic violations.
I can't say for sure, but my opinion is that the CST reports or the RMA reports that they're giving, those are their reports. And they don't really have one specific for CSD, so they put them together. But we're not doing a lot of these basketball courts. We're not doing those kind of procedure violations. We're only doing like the top three, like the speeding, stop sign, loose dog. We're only doing like the public safety ones. So
no,
I
can see that by looking at the report. But my question is, while we're doing this, is there something we're not doing that we should?
I'm going to say no. Mel does, I just use Sergeant Outram. He does about an hour. It takes him about an hour to get four or five tickets in the morning, and he's on doing something else. It doesn't take a lot of time, really. And you're in there, you're doing two things. When they see you, you're public relations, you're doing stop sign violations, you're in the community, you're doing other things besides just that ticket for an hour.
Thank you.
Well, but to that point, and I'm looking, just happened to have the latest River Valley Times. So April 7th, stop sign 7:36 a.m., speed enforcement 6:08 p.m. Looking, parking enforcement 5:40 a.m. It's counterintuitive. I'm sorry, Kelly, with all due respect. It's counterintuitive to say there's not something else not being done. I see patrol officers sitting at various hours of the day with the LIDAR. I see in the reports various hours of the day with traffic enforcement. And if whatever period of time the officer is sitting or, you know, watching a particular intersection and doing traffic enforcement, that's time that they're not spending on patrol, specific requirement in Measure J. So maybe they get an extra couple of times around the equestrian center or a couple of extra times around the commercial buildings to show a greater presence that we all know helps deter criminal activity. And, you know, that's what we're charged to do under Measure J. And so I know I sound like a beating a dead horse, but any time we send traffic enforcement is time we're not doing something else. It can't be anything but that.
I agree with what you both are saying. At the same point, though, we look at all the complaints that are coming from the community. We'll get calls all the time, the speeding of golf carts, the speeding, the traffic. They almost hit my kid. And so we, with our resources in the past, it sounds like we're helping out with that mission. But you're right. It wasn't renegotiated in the contract. It's been an agreement. And if this board says stop that action tomorrow, you better believe it's going to be stopped tomorrow. So that's all I can offer at this point.
Well, Mr. Vice President, I want an agenda item at the next regular board meeting to talk about the scope of security services. It may very well already be covered in the context of the budget discussions and defining how much money we actually allot to security services. This board has been saying for months, actually ever since the ballot measure last year was voted down, this board has been saying they're not going to spend any more property tax money to supplement security. And if that's the case, then we're going to have to make an analysis of what money we have available for security operations. But I would like to request that we have a separate agenda item to discuss that, because I want the community to know that we're going to have that discussion. So if Ms. Ferrara and others wish to come and speak to that issue, they have a good heads up that that's a topic of discussion specifically agendized.
Could I add some quick information to that? You know, the contract, the district does have the ability to review and renew the contract with the RMA in June, I believe, of every year. So that if that is the intent, then the discussion of contract negotiations should possibly be part of that scope of that discussion. Just some information.
Well, we have to determine in June whether we're going to allow it to continue, propose to revoke it,
correct,
or to propose to modify it. So, again, I think we should have already had that discussion, but at a minimum, worst case, we need to have that discussion on June 7th.
And as a reminder, too, that matters like this, it's board's policy that it goes to the appropriate policy committee before it comes to the board as well. So it should also
And we have the whole month of May that we can do that. Yes.
So
thank you.
I have
you
to add it to the security agenda first.
You do.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. My last comment about this. So the last 7 days, around between 4 o'clock and 5:30, the security vehicle is parked behind number 11 on the north, parked in between the trees for over an hour and a half every night for about 8, and they've got the radar there trying to catch people running that stop sign or speeding. So it's not just usually compliance is in the morning, coming out, and security is in patrol. You can go back there, you can see the tracks of the car every single night, because everybody plays golf and that kind of stuff. You can see the car, you can see the pickup truck hiding in between the trees, sitting there for an hour and a half. So the question is, and I disagree with you, Kelly, that there's something, always, to me, security is making the community safe from doing different things. Speeding is a compliance issue, you know, that kind of stuff there. But when they're there for an hour and a half every afternoon, and everybody sees it, maybe we just need to start videotaping everything and showing everybody, you know, where the security is spending their time. Because it's obvious, if you live here that long, you see everybody every day, that kind of stuff there. Thank you.
Kelly here.
Do I respond or no? I have nothing further.
Go respond.
I was going to say, when it comes to safety, that I would say that's part of it. If we were a police department, you do all that. Speeding is a safety issue. Mm-hmm. Giving extra patrol. I mean, I would demand that of all my officers, doing a little bit of everything. But we're unique here. So if the board said do not do A, B, or C, then we're not going to do A, B, C. We're not resisting.
We are not a law enforcement agency. The traffic regulations inside the gates are a function of RMA, not the vehicle code. And I'm not objecting. I mean, I'm one that supports the 25 mile an hour speed zone for a variety of reasons. I'm one that believes people should stop at the damn stop signs. But I don't think that's our charter. I think it's up to RMA to enforce those rules because they are theirs.
Okay.
Richard.
Okay. I got to respond to what Randy said. He seems to think it's okay for security to sit for an hour doing speed enforcement for RMA CCNRs. Well, I'd like to request a security person come over and mow the village's lawn for an hour. I mean, what's an hour? I mean, you know, what else is he going to do?
Thank you.
So that's my request.
Thank you.
Are you all done?
I'm all done.
Thank you so much, Kelly.
Travis has been...
I don't know if I want to now.
Hey, you got good stories.
Travis, come step in and let the rest of us.
You got a lot of water.
Your turn. So
next!
I'm feeling kind of shy tonight. Maybe not.
Just start with how much water's in the reservoir.
Okay, we got a lot of water. Bye.
That's too much. That's way too contrary.
Okay. I'm glad we're all in a great mood tonight. Thank you very much for coming. So we'll start with the water treatment facility. There's been some changes since I did this report last week. As of tonight, Plant 1 is now currently online. We are running at about 1.15 million gallons a day. That went online at 4:30 this afternoon, and Plant 2 is now going to be offline for some much-needed repairs and maintenance. Water consumption, as of, don't yell at me, that's for March. The cumulative potable water production for the current year is 61 million gallons. That was from at the end of March. That is currently 26.5 million gallons, 30% less than the same use period of 2022, and 21.5 million gallons less than 2020. I'm kind of attributing that to the rain, and people weren't irrigating. Raw water storage, as of April 5th, 2023, the total water currently stored in the three lakes are 4,034 acre-feet, or 1,314 million gallons of water. Yes, ma'am.
That's without the stop logs?
Stop logs were just put in. That's going to be my next sentence. Okay. But, yes, that is without the stop logs. The stop logs were just put in Monday, We had to turn the pumps off going to Calero for a day because we were going to spill in the lakes. And so I turned the pumps off Saturday and Sunday and turned them back on Monday once the stop logs were put back in. Okay. So we are currently pumping again.
And we're full.
And we are just about full. I didn't want to take a chance over the weekend of getting any water into the spillways. Because they needed dry spillways to put the stop logs in.
So instead of having my staff have to deal with that on the weekends, I just told them to turn it off. And so, I'm just curious,
in terms of how many acre feet we have available for storage, where is this 4,034 acre foot number?
This is a combination of all three lakes, of what we have in all three lakes.
Currently,
as of April 5th.
Do we know what the ratio is between that and what the three lakes can hold?
I do not currently have that. I got the current percentage full. I got the current percentage full today from my staff, and he was with the stop logs in. So we're about 87% full total right now with, you know, for the top of the stop logs.
So counting the stop logs.
Counting the two extra feet for the stop logs.
So, yeah.
So that skews the numbers that were in there 2 weeks ago when it was saying it was
right.
100% full, because now we've added.
Because we were taking that to just the spillway.
Okay.
And now, as of, because we were able to put the stop logs in April 15th, that was a weekend, so we put them in Monday morning.
Got it.
Okay.
So,
Travis, just for my remembering and benefit, that gives us an extra 2 feet, does it not?
2 feet for each lake, that is correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And then also, too, as of today, the CIA ditch is open and running. I worked with Leland Schneider, and we got the ditch up and running. We're running about 7/10 of a foot going through.
So acre foot is depth times area?
Correct.
Yes.
So an additional 2 feet at Calera would get us about an extra 220 acre feet.
I don't know right on top of my head. I have it on.
I think it's 110 acres.
Well, you got to figure. But it's going outwards too. So the
depth is not consistent.
Close enough.
Right.
Close enough.
Yeah. So. Okay.
Don't be giving us angles out, Travis.
Well, you know, sure. I don't want to get yelled at later on. So, as we sit right now, we are currently pumping 225 horsepower pumps, about 7 million gallons a day, into Calero. We are filling Calero and Chesbro. And then towards the end of the season, once those two lakes are close to being full, then we start putting water into Clementia to try to get that topped off. And then we just go back and forth towards the end of the season just to keep the lakes topped off. So, but the one thing that we did, the rains gave us quite a bit of water, which has saved us quite a bit of pumping time, that you can see on one of the diagrams. We actually saved quite a bit of pumping time because of the rains. I did also want to bring up, since we're talking about water, I've got our PFAS testing. We did PFAS testing at the water plant per EPA regulations. And as it sits right now, both raw water and potable water are non-detect in our drinking water. I have the lab reports right here. Michael had told me we're going to put it on the website, because several people have called and been asking about it since it was brought up at our integrated water master plan that someone else had done sampling. I found out that sampling was done on recycled water from a pond. It wasn't done correctly. That's neither here nor there. I've done the sampling per EPA regulations, and even though we're not mandated yet to be doing this, I've talked with Michael, and I'd like to do this quarterly for the next year. That way, when we are mandated at the end of the year, we've got some history, because generally, the water boards, whenever they're having new stuff that they're testing for, they'll have you do it quarterly for a year. And if it comes up negative, then they'll have you do it twice a year, and then they'll go to annually. So I've talked with Michael, and I'd like to be proactive a little bit and keep testing this quarterly to, you know, so we can kind of stay up on it.
I say it's a huge win, and we're very lucky that we do not have PFAS.
Correct. Yeah, and so I actually had the lab people. I didn't want to take the chance of doing this incorrectly, so we actually had the lab people come out. And EPA regulations state that we take the sample, the raw water sample coming into the facility, and right where it leaves in, right as soon as it goes into the distribution, which is right there at the water plant too.
So two places.
Two places. We take the raw water and the effluent, the treated water going out. And those are that's the current samples. That's the stuff that I currently have right now. So that will be put on the website. The general public can see it, because I've received several requests about it.
This I don't know where this is coming from in my brain, but since we can't use Clementia for potable water or as raw water, why do we worry about whether it's full or not?
Because what it does is it freshens up the water. Because it's used for recreational purposes, and when it's real low, I don't want somebody diving off that middle thing and hurting themselves.
Okay.
So if we just freshen it up and keeping it full. But I also got some other information from Michael today per our water rights. Which
one of the reasons that we pump into Clementia is because our pan evaporation rate is about 4 feet. So if we don't continue to pump water into Clementia, it'll get to the point where there won't be recreational use. Right now, we have a recreational use permit for the.
That's all we have for that.
Right. Well, actually, there's two pieces. There's the recreational is for all the runoff that goes into Clementia, which basically fills up Clementia every year, most years. And then there is a potable water use if we pump water in from the Cosumnes River. Whatever we pump into Clementia, we can utilize for potable. So if we pump, 2 acre feet in to Clementia, then we can utilize 2 acre feet out of Clementia, but we can't utilize any of the runoff as potable water.
Well, how do we separate that?
You separate it because you know what you pumped into Clementia.
But
it's not
going to be clean raw water.
Oh yeah, I mean I'm talking figuratively as far as the
it's
water.
It's just the volume we can
right.
use.
It's the water rights. Yeah.
It's not the actual water itself.
In theory, if we were going to use Clementia like that, we would pump in. Let's say that we pumped in 100 acre feet into Clementia, and we wanted to utilize that. We probably wouldn't put in a portable pump and pump it straight to the water treatment plant.
You'd probably have to get a permit anyways.
No. The permit lets us. So what we would do is we would take that 100 acre feet that we pumped into Clementia. So if we pump 200, let's say we put 100 acre feet in Clementia from Cosumnes, we can utilize that 100 acre feet. But the best way I think that to utilize that for potable use would be we have a manhole and we have a fitting. We could actually bring on a pump to pump into the pipeline that goes to Claro. It would be probably wiser to take that 100 acre feet, take it to Claro, allow that to settle out, and then go through. So that's what I learned today from our water rights expert, who's an expert in water rights. So did you have any questions, Linda? You look like
just,
you might
it's
have
a joke.
yeah.
I mean, the process that you have to go through to use
sure,
that
sure.
water.
But it also could be a way to have additional storage that we don't have to construct. So there could be a potential benefit to that. So the thought would be, if we wanted to utilize Clementia for potable storage, what we would do is we would have to pump water in from the Cosumnes before it became full within our water year. And then we track how much we pump in. And then once it rains, that thing's just going to fill up. So once it's full, we don't do anything. As it comes down, we put the boards in, we pump additional 2 feet. So we get to utilize that many acre feet. Whatever we put into Clementia from Cosumnes, we can utilize for potable, but we can't utilize one drop from the runoff.
And I assume that information will be shared with our consultants. Who
oh yeah, yeah. Actually, the consultant was in on that.
Plan.
Was
in
on that.
Meeting?
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. But 100%.
John.
I don't think this is just informational, but based on Travis's calculations or readings of what's in storage and secondary storage here in the wastewater treatment plant, and what will flow in between now and October 15th. The golf course will not use all the water that is in storage and coming in for treatment. By October 15th, based on the average dry weather flow, we're probably going to have between 175 and 200 acre feet beyond what the country club requires. So the question becomes, do you turn on the recycle for gardens and retreats and begin delivering recycle to those meters? Because at the billing rate that you're running the potable water through the purple pipes, it's $180,000 worth of water, just FYI. So again, we've never set a recycled water rate yet, never had that rate hearing, but we're charging $217 for all the potable that goes into the purple pipe meters and the landscape irrigation through the purple pipe. So we're going to have, you know, $180,000 worth of water. Van Vleck pays us zero. That's 180 acre feet that stays in storage. And that was the whole reason for the recycled water plan. So I just wanted to bring that up. This is the first time that we've been well over the country club need. And because there's still a lot of moisture in the ground, I don't think they're going to be turning the irrigation up probably till middle of June.
They're actually irrigating now.
I know they're irrigating, but they're not irrigating at a million gallons a day.
Right.
They're irrigating at a low rate for greens and teas because there's plenty of soil moisture in there. So I'm just bringing it up that
I don't think this is
something that the district should have dealt with as far as the rate, but now you got almost 200 acre feet that is sitting there that could be utilized for offset of potable.
I'll let Michael answer that, but I don't think we're in a position to turn a valve and make it go there.
I don't believe we have the infrastructure in place to be able to serve the gardens at this time. Now there has been some purple pipe projects that gets us closer to that mm-hmm. goal, mm-hmm. But the one piece that we're missing is the pressurization. Like, I don't believe the existing pressure from the pumps going to Lake 16, 17 would be sufficient at all times, and those pumps only operate at certain times. So what needs to happen, and this is going to be addressed in part of the Integrated Water Master Plan, is we need to, if we want to start serving the gardens and the retreats and other potential users, we may need to add some additional storage based on the fluctuation of use. But we definitely need to add some type of pressurization, whether that be a hydropneumatic tank or an elevated tank somewhere, probably a hydropneumatic tank at the treatment plant, I would assume. Okay. And once we have that pressurization, then we can connect to some of the infrastructure that we have put in and supply that.
So neither gardens or retreats is served off of Lake 1670.
Right, correct, and they couldn't be. They'd have to be. Once the Title 22 water is commingled with the golf course water, we cannot deliver that to a dual plumb system. It has to be Title 22 straight out of the pipe, coming right from the plant with the chlorine residual in it.
So, we run that water over the Yellow Bridge. We run it pressurized over the Yellow Bridge.
For which use?
For gardens and for Bass Lake.
Okay. Oh, you're talking about?
Retreats west.
Travis chime
retreats
in.
East. Okay. And gardens okay. are served off of the north pump station, not the south.
Hey, John, do you mind if I chime in for a second?
Please, jump in.
So one of the things he's talking is these pumps back here, they don't run 24/7. Like when we're sending over to Bass, they only run when we're sending it over to Bass Lake, and it's not 24/7. So it's not a constant pressure in that pipe. Where the, and I'm sure you're aware, where the purple pipe is on the other side of the yellow bridge, where it can be valved to go to Marietta Gardens, since it's an open end on the other side of Bass Lake, that pipe does not keep pressurized. So we wouldn't be able to keep constant pressure for people to irrigate.
Correct.
On that note, but then also, too, if you're taking it straight out of there without sending it to a tank, the chlorine residual is going to kill the irrigation, because we have to keep coming up for right now per our WDR. We have to have a 4.5 milligram per liter parts coming out of there, and it's usually higher. If we send that to irrigation, we'd be in a lot of trouble for killing people's grasses.
So I think it's always been understood that the house controllers will only feed the landscape irrigation during the time that the pressurization's on that pipe. That was always part of the discussion with Kevin Kennedy and Paul Stevenson.
That's not possible. Not with the way the things are set up right now.
Okay. So, but if that isn't possible, then what's written as to how they were going to.
And that's going to be addressed.
They were going to branch it off for gardens.
A lot of pipe was put in the ground, and a lot of assumptions were made, and we're bringing that all back home with the Integrated Water Master Plan to see what infrastructure do we need to add to make that a reality.
Because that's
definitely high on my list.
So I'm raising my hand
and
saying right now that there's between 175 and 200 acre feet that the country club probably isn't going to beneficially need.
I hear what you're saying.
Okay. And, you know, we know what goes up and down in a year.
Yep.
And we're 200 on top of a normal year. If we have a 100-year event, we're going to be up against that 700.
We'll likely be leaning a little harder on Van Vleck than we usually do.
Again, we're giving up money.
I hear you.
Okay.
But now, if we don't have the infrastructure in place yet, then, you know.
But
We have to modify our permit before we can do that.
We have to give Van Vleck a certain amount of water every 2 years.
Per contract?
No, per our WDR.
Per our easement.
Well, I mean, it's in our WDR
it's
also.
It's in the easement as well.
Okay, yeah.
You've got to give them water every other year.
We also have to renegotiate our WDR.
So at some point I have to jump in and say we're getting a little beyond the operations.
Okay, I apologize, sir. I was asking a question.
Marty? I didn't want to.
I hear what you're saying, John.
Now's the time to identify it.
Okay, thank you.
Marty, I was going to suggest about 10 minutes ago that this just move to the Improvements Committee.
Oh.
Because I
apologize.
This needs to go to the Improvements Committee.
You're fine.
I understand that we're losing some money, but the time it's going to take to put this infrastructure in place may be too late to capture that money, but it needs to be hashed out at the committee level. And I also would like to move the conversation about moving water from Clementia to Calero on the agenda for the Improvements Committee, because I'd like to hear a little bit more about
that. Okay, no problem.
I got it.
Do you got those two?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and I just want to say that concern is heard, and, you know, recycled water is a valuable asset, and it's my goal to move that forward as we move forward. We just have to have the proper tools in which to do it.
We spent a lot of money putting the pipe underneath the highway to get there to never use it is kind of crazy.
Right.
But, yeah, I agree.
Okay.
All right.
Bring us home.
Okay. I'm done. No.
Thank you, Travis.
But per John, we have about 65.6 acre-feet more of the usable wastewater storage than we did the same time last year, as it sits. Moving along here, sticking with the wastewater facility, the tertiary process of the wastewater facility, I've spoken with Art, and we're going to be turning that on next Tuesday to start.
make you recycle water to send across the street. He said he had about a week's worth of irrigation water in there, so so far as it sits right now, we will be getting that put up to start sending them water, about 1 million gallons a day.
Bass Lake.
Bass Lake, correct. The utility crew report, the district did 12 utility stars, and those consist of either doing final reads, rebates, or meter swaps. We had 9 field markings. We had 2 water-related issues that were homeowners' problems. We had 1 water leak in March. The rest is just stuff that you can read, nothing, you know, just valve exercising and flushing. On the infrastructure, the SB 170 projects, there wasn't really any change since last month's update. Lake 11, we're still waiting for the latch to be made. We had the withdrawings were sent to Lund, and they're making the permanent lock latch for the top of the drainage inlet. Rio also, there's been some change since I did this update. Prodigy Electric called me. He now has both VFDs for Rio also. He's going to be installing the first one on Monday, and if everything goes well, he'll be installing the second one on Thursday, so they should be installed next week.
Great.
And then we will be, and then we're just waiting on Tesco to get the programming done to for the pumps to switch on their own. Lift stations, there was no change since last month. For development, under Riverview, the construction homes have been started. All the underground work in the first phase has been completed and accepted by the district. The retreats, Michael gave you an update on that on his report. Circle K, the fire marshal is still waiting to do a pressure test, or they're still waiting for the fire marshal to do a pressure test, and they're just continuing construction on their building. Tractor supply is completed, and this will be the last time I'm mentioning these. That's in my report. And Marietta Gardens, construction is being done on the slab for the building, and we're still waiting to move the underground water line that is going to be right where the retaining wall is, with the which the contractor will be moving. Other than that, do you have any questions for me on anything?
Anybody have any questions? Betty?
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Betty.
I didn't do it.
No comment. I was gonna end with a very positive note, and he doesn't want to hear from
me. Oh, no, ma'am. I'm always ready for positive.
I was gonna, oh, come on, Travis. I want to report on the utility crew. Okay. They're out there tonight, working on a favorite place of Linda's and mine, which happens to be Cozumel, which has needed repair and has been repaired, but it had not been completed. Tonight, I should have taken pictures of all the trucks, all of the work, and everything that they've been doing. I talked to Ron, and it is going to be completed. So I want you to go home tonight with a positive feeling.
Thank you.
And not be so shy.
No.
When you see me.
Appreciate it.
So he needs positive. Let's help him.
I
and I'm helping Linda try to get home. That's with all those trucks. Good luck.
Great. I did hear one other thing where one of the residents gave Travis a bunch of kudos for flushing out a line and made her water quality better. So
thank you.
Thank you. So we're on to
Director Paul. Sorry to interrupt. We need to return at some point during the meeting to the consent calendar, unfortunately, for 2 items to have them reconsidered by the board. Would you like to do that now or at some point later in the meeting?
I'm fine with that. Why don't you wait for us to be done? There's a comments from the public in a minute.
Yes. Before Travis feels too good, I'm just kidding.
That's fine.
No, before we move on, I'd like to go back to the general manager's report. I was wondering if we could get an update on the status of...
Let's address one thing at a time. I'll bring you back up in just a minute when we talk about comments from the public. How's that?
Okay. This specifically General Manager's.
I will bring you back.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Director Paul, I just noticed in reviewing the consent calendar the vote, which was three yes and one no for the consent calendar, successfully passed items 3A and 3B. However, items 3C and 3D are continuation of the emergency contracting declaration, which actually require a higher vote of the board to pass. With a no vote, they do not pass. And therefore, I'd suggest that the board reconsider those items by, if it wishes, pulling items 3C and 3D and separately voting on them.
Could we get a motion to reconsider?
So moved.
Okay. Second?
I'll second.
So,
roll call vote.
Let's make sure we know what we're voting on here.
Yeah.
My suggestion would be that the motion is to separately take up items 3C and 3D. You've already passed 3A and 3B with the vote recorded by your secretary, but this is the vote to pass items 3C and 3D separately.
And the emergency nature of those requires four votes?
You're correct.
Okay.
Okay, so we have a
Should we vote them separately, or can we do them together?
The motion is to do them together, and that's appropriate.
Okay.
Does anybody have any further discussion? Then we'll have a roll call vote.
Very good. Roll call vote. Director Paul?
Aye.
And Director Jacob?
Aye.
Director Butler?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew, for keeping us
on our toes.
Okay.
Good catch. We're on item five, and does anybody have any issues with the scheduled meetings that are listed in the agenda? If not, I'll note we have some correspondence from Wendell Kuhn.
And I just want to go back, because I have it on the website in like four different places. I'm going to put it on a tile on the front page of the website that there's a change in the May meeting, and it won't be on that regular date. It'll still be our regular board meeting, but it'll be on June 7th, conveniently placed for Mr. Janko, and so that he will miss it.
Yes.
Okay.
And so there won't be a regular, there will be a regular May meeting, but it'll be in June. And I've been getting questions on the phone, so I'm going to make it as obvious as possible. I'll put it on Facebook too.
Okay. Sounds good. I just note that we have a letter from Wendell Kuhn in the board packet that where he requested that we take or reconsider the use of compostable bags in the trash. So maybe we'll hit that another day. Now, comments from the public. Richard, you're up.
Yeah, I have two separate comments. One was relating to the general manager's report. I was wondering if we could get an update on status of Public Record Act requests.
Oh. Yeah, Mealy, what's the status on that? I believe
we have had two or three redacted emails sent over to the person who asked for all those emails.
Yeah, there's been more than one set with the same person.
Yes.
And they're still working through them, aren't
they? We'll get them monthly.
We've sent either three or four sets at this point.
Okay.
They're averaging about two a month.
And other outstanding requests?
Did you have any outstanding requests, Richard?
I have one from August 17th I never heard anything about.
We can report that out at the next day.
And that was actually reported in the following month in the general manager's report. So, other than that, I wouldn't have even known it had been received. But I submitted it on August 17th, 2022. Okay, thank you.
I'll email you if I have any questions.
Okay, thank you. My other comment has to do with at the March 27th board meeting, a member of the public got up to the podium and asked, what was Tom Hennig's total severance package? And I was interested in hearing the answer to that. And she was told that at the next board meeting that would be answered. Well, at the 4/12, April 12th, special board meeting, the board president said something about Tom Henning, quote, severance package specifically, it was the number of vacation hours, and that's at 218.7 hours of vacation pay.
Okay.
That's not an answer to the question that was asked. Yet, question was, what was Tom Henning's total severance package? Maybe that was the total of that. That's all he got was vacation pay, but I'd like to know what the answer is. What was Tom Henning's?
I don't have that.
You don't have it?
I don't have it in front of me, no.
Okay.
But
did he get anything more than just vacation pay? Does anybody know?
I don't know if we can answer that because it's personnel.
Yeah, we'll need to treat it as a request, and we'll send you a response to it.
Okay. Well, actually, that's what Crystal Matter asked.
Maybe said it would be at this board meeting.
No, well, actually, he addressed it at the April 12th special board meeting. I think he tried to skirt around it, yeah. But his total answer was that, well, he said that he acted as if the question was specifically what was the number of vacation hours, and that was not the question. The question from the member of the public, which wasn't me, but I'm interested in knowing the answer, is
I think,
what was Tom Henning's total severance package?
I think.
And Tim said that the next board meeting.
I understand your question.
Okay. Yeah.
And Andrew answered it. And
yes.
Understood.
Your
okay. We'll
okay, thank you.
So then send us a request, Richard.
No, we'll treat that as
so, excuse me, but I don't think staff should be answering the gentleman in that manner. Mr. Ramos, I have a question.
Yes.
A comment that Amelia made on the side. Because Mr. Henning was a public employee, all of the amounts that were paid to him for any component of severance pay would be subject to public review. Am I correct?
And I understood that Ms. Wilder was asking me the question, and the answer is all of that is public information.
Right.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you.
Okay, Betty.
Betty Ferraro again. At the town hall meetings, we had a hectic time of people wanting to talk, hogging all the time and talking. So I'm going to make a suggestion, and CSD has done in the past, is put an electron out, mic, and a line. And if you want to talk, you get in the line. And I don't care if you're there an hour. You know, you're going to give your opportunity to talk. And everybody will have a free time to talk. We shouldn't have to have Stephen get up there and try to round everybody up and get things to process. So my consideration to you would be to do the electron, do the mic, set it down as a procedure, line forms, and it works much smoother. I mean, it has in the past. I can't guarantee anything because life isn't that way. But I hope that that would be more positive than having people shouting here or there and having one person run all over the room trying to service everybody. Yeah.
So, Betty, if I may, I thank you for that suggestion. We actually have already discussed, and that will be our protocol at the April 26th meeting.
I'm glad you're ahead of me. Gee, I'm getting older, and it takes longer to get here.
Great minds.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
Well, don't ask Randy.
Okay.
Thank you very much for listening.
Also, I would suggest that you ask each person to state their name when they come to the lectern.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, well,
she did. Betty did.
I think she means at the April 26th.
Oh, there. Okay, yeah. Thank you. We're on agenda item number 8 regarding the negotiations for the general manager and his contract. Not quite sure how this is on there, but you want to just discuss it?
So for this item, the Brown Act requires that when the board engages in negotiations with the public employee, it identify its negotiators. Okay. There had been some previous discussion about having the ad hoc transition committee do that work, but there was never any official announcement from the board that they were going to do that as far as I was concerned. So this item is to confirm the identity of the negotiating team.
So, yes, the ad hoc committee is part of the negotiating team along with the consultant and I believe you're going to be involved.
I'll assist the district, yes.
Great.
Thank you.
So you've got that for the minutes, the ad hoc committee.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Great. I'm on nine. Number nine regarding the ad hoc committee. The board created this ad hoc committee, which consists of myself and President Mabee, to meet with the general manager and the staff and the Poon group to provide some guidance on issues that come up. And over the last month, we've met probably three times, and we talked about the recruitment of the general manager, talked about recruiting an account manager. We set some priorities and schedules with the Poon group with regard to audits. We talked about the Prop 218 notice, the upcoming budget, upcoming capital improvement plans, and plans for public input, which is going to occur August 26th. We also talked about the financing and services agreements, talked about contracting for the cost allocation study and the Prop 218 rate study. We talked about implementation of our new software with the Tyler Group, and we talked about the grand jury response. That concludes my notes. So now we need to talk about a resolution with regard to Cal Waste. Is that you, Paula?
Yes. Ultimately, staff had brought this back for a resolution for a grant application, and the board adopted resolution R-2022-05, which allowed us to apply for SP 1383 grants. Subsequently, CalRecycle has asked us to resubmit this resolution to the board to extend the period for 5 years so that we can continue to apply for additional grants. The initial grant that we were filing for, we did not get funding for. We were not able to apply for the second round, and so now they're in the third round, and their suggestion was to extend this for a 5-year period in order to give us the ability to apply for more grants as they become available.
So if we're looking at the resolution, the 5 years is where? Oh, there it is. The fourth paragraph? Mm-hmm. So anybody like a motion to approve this?
All moved. Do we need to do two readings on the resolution or just one?
Resolution can be approved.
So I'll move that we approve the resolution.
I'll second it. Any discussion?
Assuming council has looked at it and doesn't see any problem with it.
I have reviewed and approved it, yes.
All right, so let's have a vote.
Director Paul?
Aye.
Director Janko?
Aye.
Director Butler?
Yes.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Thank you.
So we're on to talking about the safety center remodel.
Yes. Let me give you just a brief background.
And there was a late memo, which you all have there on your seats.
Okay. We just got some information in today, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've been collecting the information up to 2 o'clock this afternoon.
So the remodel got started on the safety center, and they ran into a lot of water damage and a lot of mold. And so we had to do a mold study. We had to further inspect the dry rot, and it's throughout siding, beams, insulation is messed up. I mean, that would have got teared out anyways, and in parts of the interior of the unit. The work will require mold remediation plus replacing more of the beams, more of the siding, insulation, and the studs. And so we asked for a cost estimate on what it's going to add to the project, and they came back with, I believe, $142,000 to do the entire building. Mm-hmm. Correct?
Yes, that's
on top of the 77 77,800. So it's substantially a lot higher. So far to date, we have spent $36,000 towards the Endeavor. A lot of this is mobilization, purchasing, pre-purchasing the windows, wood and the plastics and general mobilization. So what we did is we looked at several options. What's
that? Have those all been shipped to us?
They haven't been shipped. They've just been
purchased,
ordered, and they're holding on to them. We have them. For good or for ill. I don't know how much of that we could take back.
I was just going to say that was my question.
We'll have to find out how much of that is returnable.
Mm-hmm.
So our options are, option one, repair the existing mobile unit. So we're looking at $142,000 for that option. Option two, we looked at lease at 24 by 40 refurbished mobile unit, which is slightly smaller than the other. And then refurbished mobile unit is estimated at $183,000, including tax delivery setup and removal of the old unit. You could lease the same size model at $1,200 a month. A 20-year estimated cost would be $290,000. I used a 20-year life because that's about close to what we got at the other one. You have to use something to compare and contrast. We could purchase or lease a 12 by 40 refurbished mobile unit. So that's basically what they call a single wide. Mm-hmm. But it would be just less space. Honestly, Kelly, you can speak up. You don't utilize the whole entire space, do you, currently?
Currently, no. We the safety center was designed to have the CHP, the sheriff's department, as well as the volunteers.
Right.
All of us housed the facility. However, per agreement, we have to take care of the trailer. They do not have a share in the costs. The CHP sheriffs do not share. It's all we have to maintain.
But we could provide a slightly smaller conference.
We can. I think we said 8 feet difference.
Yeah.
8 feet. It's not.
It's 12 feet difference.
I thought it was 8.
So okay.
It's double.
Double
versus
single. So
what we have now is a double wide, and then we're looking at option number 3 on your list, which would be a single wide.
Yeah.
Now keep in mind, if we went with the purchase option for the 12 by 40, it would be $97,200, including tax delivery and setup and removal of the old unit. But keep in mind that we've already spent, we might not be able to get much of that $36,000 back that we've already spent on the remodel that we're working on currently. I mean, you add the 36 into that, you're looking at 130 something.
So
we incur that expense no matter which option we employ.
Yes, that's correct. Unless we're able to somehow, if I was a contractor, I'd say you bought it, it's yours, and then we'd have to do a surplus and then try to sell it at some rate.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they would be kind. And, if we said, hey, we're terminating the contract. And they're going to say, well, you bought all this stuff. We're not going to. Who knows what they'll say, but, we could explore that option.
So
it's kind of like fish and cut bait. That's what we're.
Wait a second. So the option 3 has a bathroom.
It's an option 2 and option 3 are both mobile units, just like this one. They would have option 2, which is a double wide, almost the same size as that. Has 4 offices, a little tiny kitchen, a bathroom, and a conference area. Option 3, which would be a 12 by 40, so a single wide, would have a bathroom, offices, and a
living room, conference room.
Yeah, and a little kitchen. They would all have a bathroom and a little kitchen. The safety center now has 2 restrooms, and I just got a quote for 1. I mean, stand in line.
also keep in mind, look at option 4
on the back.
We also wanted to take a look at, could we rent some commercial space locally and have a more of a presence in the commercial area, but the costs are so high, the 20-year cost would be
absurd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just wouldn't compete with us being able to procure, either continue fixing the additional unit, and there's a possibility that there may be additional things that we run into.
That's a probability.
It's a probability, especially, I don't think they have trusses on that thing. No, there's no trusses to be rotten. They probably know about most of the 2x4s, but there could be slightly more.
The cost of taking it down or removing it in some way?
That's included.
Figured in here?
They estimated that at about $20,000 to remove it.
But so when you look at option two, $183,000, that includes the tax delivery setup and removal of the old unit.
Oh, okay.
And I only had the opportunity to contact and get a bid from one company. So Andrew reminded me that if this was an option that the board wanted to move forward with, I would be getting three bids from different companies. So it might get better.
Basically, what we're going to ask the board for tonight is whether we continue with this contract or we terminate the contract.
So tell me, on option one, if the $142,000 is all our costs, or there's other...
That's everything. That includes the 36.
The work that they proposed to do before, plus the new work.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So 142 plus 36.
Oh, no, the 36 is in the 142.
It's in there. Okay.
Yeah.
But the 36 is not in option two or three.
Okay. Or four.
Okay.
So option four is off the table. Is that what anybody
well,
would say?
Well, renting the office space, I mean, that's your choice.
Yeah, it's whatever the...
You have to ask them if they want to rent it.
I understand, but can we do this now? Can we eliminate some of these?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think maybe the way we might move forward would be to tonight. You know, we get some direction from the board whether we continue on with this construction project, and if the answer is yes, then we continue on with the construction project. If the answer is no, then we bring this to the improvements committee and we decide which option we want to do from there.
And something else that I really should point out, I don't mean to be a bother, but this didn't include new carpets or new linoleum in the building. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's 20 years old.
And the option four is no tenant improvements?
Yeah.
No, this is just space rent.
It's just space rent.
And that's assuming no increase in rent.
Martin, I have a couple of questions. The discussion, were we to purchase or lease a new unit, the background information suggests that we rent space and place that at Murrieta Plaza. Is that correct?
No. The space, are you talking about?
Well, that's an alternative to purchasing. If we purchase a new unit, it'll go where the existing one is.
That's the thought.
And they'll haul that one out.
Okay.
And so they'll put it in place, they tie it down. We would use the existing ramp and stairs that are over there, because that's $20,000. So Paula pointed out that we could use the existing ones. And then we would still have to have somebody come and hook up the sewer and the water. But I know a guy who does that. And the electricity to it, right?
You got a guy?
Yeah, I got a guy.
She knows a guy. Where did he go?
All right, and now he's gone.
Not me.
Anyway, I think I can get a deal on that part.
Oh, he's talking about Travis.
Yeah.
Okay.
So just everything to consider. This unit would still need flooring and...
A new unit?
No, this unit over here, in addition to the 142, it's still going to need flooring. And I don't know what else.
Well, and I think, you know, ultimately with this building, considering the condition that it's in, we don't know what we don't know. So once they start pulling off more of the siding and then the internal walls, it may become almost as costly as just replacing it with a refurbished one. So it's the board's decision to decide which option they would like us to proceed with, and then we can just take it from there.
Well, are there any circumstances option one is more expensive than option three?
Kelly,
yes.
Refresh my memory. Last meeting, you had an opinion about moving over to the Murrieta Plaza.
Correct. I said, I think I said exactly, staffing, there were concerns with that. When you go to the mall, when you go to those places where they have the substations, they're never staffed because they're always gone. That was our concern. And here, right across the street, everybody seems to be able to find us. No matter what happens to security, you're going to have that. That could be used for operations, that could be used for training, an emergency center. You have options for it right here on the facility. So regardless of what happens to security in the future, having that resource I think would be very valuable, especially when you have emergencies and evacuations, fires. Having something close to CSD I think would enhance security, safety,
So those are my thoughts about staying close, especially as short-staffed as we are.
Well, the other thing that jumps off the page here is no restroom.
That's the first thing that jumped off the page for me.
Well, they'd have to, there's a common, it's like
upstairs.
It's commercial.
Upstairs. They would have to go upstairs.
Mike? If you're renting space, commercial space.
Yeah, here they would have to go into the restroom.
Which budget is this money coming out of?
That was going to be my next one, but we had some reserve funds to pay for this, and so that's my next question, is we got to know where the money's coming from.
So let me know what it is, the square foot that we're buying this or running this trailer for. Do you have any idea what?
Well, the square foot for a 24 by 40, right, is 24 times 40. So
we get 12 by 40.
The 24 by 40 would be 960 square feet.
Okay.
And the 40 by 12, the single wide, 480 square feet.
Okay. So it doesn't come out of the security fund, right? It comes out of another reserve that you have?
It's not coming out of the operating budget.
Okay. So it's coming out of some. You're putting that money. That money's going into some fund. Is that coming out of the security fund that they started in 2016?
It would be coming out of the security replacement reserves account. Right now, we have a little bit over $89,000 for the original CIP that was appropriated in the current year budget. If we choose to move forward with any one of those three options to buy refurbished or to continue that, we would need to take it back to the board for an additional appropriation from the security replacement reserves.
Okay. Just my comment. Security is, it is the conversation that everybody is having. You know, RMA's having, all the citizens are having. Do we keep it a CSD? Do you take it away from it? Do you, all kinds of questions. We raised dues 19% 3 years ago. It didn't get passed last time. You're asking for a 10% raise. Please get a little to that. I wouldn't spend any money if you had to, and you get this thing settled down and tucked away, because it's just going to add more. Being on the board is a difficult position. I get that. You don't ever see me criticize you guys for the job that you have. But I just think politically it's really not a good move to spend this kind of money that's going to come out of security to be placed with security when security is such a hot topic. Yes. That's just my, you're running vacant positions, but you're going to spend $100,000+ on a building that gets very rarely, rarely used. No, that wasn't here the first 20 years that I was here.
That's not really
here.
True.
That's not true, but Lynn?
It gets used on a daily basis.
I'm in it every day, or people right. change
and,
every day.
Before you came to Jim, before they had an office here.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And Jim,
but there's no room here for people.
Okay. So I just think you're opening up another can.
I don't know where you're supposed to go if we don't make a decision about this. Where do we put you? Because that building is not usable at this point.
That's one of the concerns. Mm-hmm. And when we get our VIP program back, mm-hmm. Whenever that is, that's going to be open to the public.
Right.
It's one of the things you have to...
I think... What's before us today is not to spend the money, but to investigate it further.
I do.
And make a choice which one we're going to investigate.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
I thought the choice was whether or not to continue the contract.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what we need.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I hate to put
to
this to the board.
Option, but are we going to continue the contract or not?
Well, go ahead, Linda.
How can we continue a contract on something that we have no idea what the results are going to be, except for money, lots of money?
Yeah, there could be more. There could be.
How'd you come up with the first answer of repairing it without having an inspection on it? I mean, usually when you change houses or you're looking at a house, you have a building inspector come in and say, "What's wrong with this property right now? You need a new roof, you need a new sewer." So you guys made a decision 2 months ago to go ahead and spend this kind of money before you really knew what was going on.
We had a construction company come out and do
it. After the fact?
No, before. They just didn't do destructive testing.
They came out and gave us an estimate to do the work that they could see, assuming there would be more work.
And they said it's possible that there is more work. They won't know until they get started.
And so we put a 15% contingency in the budget to do the repairs. And then when they came out and pulled off the siding, they found that there were beams underneath on the bottom where the trailer hooks into the skirting that were completely rotten.
Okay, I have two other options for you. The There's a company in Stockton that builds these temporary. It's right off.
The trailers?
The trailers off Ark Road. And PIA, which is a state agency, which you're a state agency, build these trailers too that are very, very inexpensive, cheap. So you have two other options. So just going to and buying one from somebody that's in the business to make a profit may not be your first choice. There's other options out there.
And you're going to tell me those so that if I'm instructed to explore those options, I'll call them up and I'll get it, right?
Yeah. Prison Industries builds those, Mike?
Yeah.
That size?
Yeah. They build any kind of size you want. There's all the fire camps and all these places have, and they've shut down all these fire camps. There's all these vacant buildings that the state has that they've built, and all these other trailers that they have that they're not utilizing. Every single prison has these buildings on the site.
What's the name of the company, Mike?
PIA.
PIA.
It's not a company.
It's a state agency.
Doesn't DGS auction those off, Mike?
Yeah, you get them real cheap.
Yeah.
And plus there's a company that's very inexpensive that do a really good job going on Ark Road in Stockton. And you find this company, they'll make anything you want.
Inside of it.
We looked at this stuff a couple years ago, and it's about half the price you guys want.
Thank you.
I'll call you before I get any more quotes.
So
I'm just thinking that we need to stop these people from what they're doing.
Yeah, that's one action the board could take.
And have they been paid for what they've done so far?
I believe. We have to pay them 36.
Yes.
Yeah.
We've paid them, we've made progress payments to them so far.
So,
Do we have a ability in the contract to cancel the contract?
They signed our contract, so it's the 10.
We'll have to make sure.
We'll take a look, but if they signed our contract, should be yes.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not getting a feeling that we want to do that yet. Well, a little bit, maybe. I mean, that's what I would want to do, but I don't know about the rest of the board.
Yeah, and we provided some examples just for comparison basis, but if the board decided to cancel the contract tonight, you know, the next step would be for us to cancel the contract, but the next step after that would be to bring this to improvements and take a look at some of these additional vendors that, you know, Mr. Martell is talking about and some other options.
That would be the next logical step. As an alternative, could we not just suspend the work while we did further investigation whether or not we wanted to continue with the contract?
I'd have to look at the contract. I'm not sure how long we'll be able to suspend the work.
Right.
But they'll probably just get started on something else. We would run the risk if we suspended the work, and we wanted to continue, we might.
Yeah, you're going to have delay costs. Then.
Yeah. There'll probably be some costs related to
contractors
that.
Contractors wouldn't do that, would they, Marty?
Oh,
come on.
So let's go down the row here. What's your preference?
I don't think I have enough information to state a preference.
Linda?
I have a preference. I have two preferences. I think we don't have a choice but to suspend or end the contract because it's obvious that we have other opportunities that we haven't completely looked into. Plus, worst case scenario, option three to me would be the one to go with. Option four, I think we should take that off the list.
Andy?
I think... rather than option two, for a similar price, you can get something brand new versus fixing up something that's 20 years old. So my preference is to just cancel the contract.
I'll chime in then. I don't know that we have the money to go toward $142,000 at this minute, but. So I'd want that answered, but my preference is to cancel the contract.
Mm-hmm. Paula, do we in this from what we know about ending balances, getting back to the audit, like, but, you know, assuming that the Poon Group comes up with some kind of ending balance for us at some point, what's your gut for how much we have in security reserve?
I could probably give you a very rough ballpark if you want to stand by for a second.
Well, while Paul is looking for that, I think it's just if we're going to cancel the contract, then I think by default that means that we then are determining that we should either lease or purchase a new unit. I mean, right? I mean, that would be the effect, or they'd be the only reason for...
Or refurbished, I mean, new or refurbished.
Well, yeah. And that would buy us some time to investigate some further options, such as those that Mike suggested, for either a lease or a purchase.
You have two roads. If you believe that the district is going to be in the security business long term, you go with probably would want to go with the building replacement. If you were unsure about the status, you might take a calculated risk and do a lease.
Well, I don't understand that comment. Aren't we bound by the provisions of Measure J to provide security to this community?
Yes, we are. But
and when I asked the questions about transferring that to RMA, I was told that wasn't feasible because the funding mechanism is directly to CSD. So yeah. I don't know how that option is even feasible, Michael.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You're not sure. You know, things change. There's probably a lot of public agencies out there that used to do security that no longer do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well,
there aren't any in CSD.
Let's
3,200, and we're the only one.
You got it yet?
I do. Okay. So what I can say is at the end of 2020, we had 328,000 in unreserved fund balance in our capital replacement.
I'm sorry, I missed the number. Please repeat it.
328,440, to be exact. And our capital replacement, which is unrestricted reserve, but it's specifically towards replacement, we had 183,647. So we've used about 100,000 of that replacement. I don't have the number in front of me of how much we've gained for the replacement reserve fees. We've used about half of our unreserved fund balance on the cameras. So without knowing what we've collected versus what we've expanded, I would say we probably have about 125 that we could throw towards a new building if that's the route the board wants to take.
In addition to
what we already have, yes.
Is that 79 that was already set aside? 85?
The 89, yes.
Previously, correct.
Okay, yeah.
Correct. Now, also, if we decided to share a part of that building with, let's say, operations or utility, in a sense, we could potentially utilize water or sewer.
Certainly.
As a partial fund.
It would be a shared expense if it's a shared use.
Okay. Somebody want to make a motion?
I make a motion that we cancel the contract with, I don't know, even know their names.
Staples.
Anybody want to second it?
I'll second it.
Any other discussion?
Bless you.
Thank you, Director Shanko.
Would the maker of the motion accept an amendment that added that we, in addition to canceling the contract, we explore the options of leasing or purchasing a replacement building?
I think we already discussed moving this to improvements where we will we'll address that.
So that's a no? You're not interested in the amendment?
No, it's fine. I think we've already decided that, but yeah, that's fine. Yes.
And then the second would also need to approve that, right? That amendment?
It's up to you, Leonard.
Correct.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion?
Other than, I mean, I don't know if we have to discuss this or not, but I think we take option four off of that.
Well, let's give direction.
Maybe just let the improvements committee come back with whatever the options are, right?
That's fine.
Okay,
that's
so
fine.
Amelia, go for it.
Roll call vote. Director Paul.
Aye.
Director Jacob.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Aye.
Director Booth.
Aye.
Thank you, Paul.
Any of the directors have any comments or suggestions?
I do.
Great, go.
It's not on
No, it's just whatever you want to name, Marty.
I just want to make a couple comments about the March 18th meeting, because it's been portrayed as some sort of free-for-all, and it was anything but that. There are definitely things that I would change about the meeting and about the things, the way we conducted the meeting, but nobody hogged the meeting. Everybody got a chance to ask their questions, ultimately. There was a little bit of, what would you call it, misguidance or lack of direction, I guess, because of a couple things in the beginning. But frankly, I really don't like the idea that people in the community have portrayed this as some kind of free-for-all, because it was not that.
Kevin, you got any?
No, I think I've said far more than I probably should have tonight.
Randy?
I have nothing.
I have nothing except thank you for coming. And yeah, motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second.
Thank you, Director Janka, Director Liz, Director Paul.
Aye.
Director Janka?
Aye.
Director Butler?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.